You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
About a month ago, news surfaced that medical doctors are considering denying fertility treatments to fat women. The Canadian Fertility and Andrology Society, which proposed the treatment ban, argue that fat women face higher risks of medical complications while trying to become pregnant through in vitro fertilization. Fat activists, on the other hand, argue that the proposal is an attempt to institutionalize fat oppression. Calamity Hildebrandt is a fat activist and an instigator with Fat Panic Vancouver, an alliance of people of all sizes who are committed to ending the oppression of fat people. Red Eye Collective member Maria Pear's daughter sat down with Calamity to talk about the challenges fat people experience in trying to access reproductive and health services. Maria began by asking where the name Fat Panic came from.
It was inspired by a conference that I went to two summers ago with a group called No Lose, and they actually themed that year's conference on fat oppression, fat activism. They themed it Fat Panic, and I really liked it because I'm also really familiar with the idea of moral panics and the notion that society likes to offload its anxieties onto particular groups of people, and right now a very popular group for doing that with is fat people. Right, so that's where we see like huge media, kind of like endless media talk about the dangers of fatness, the obesity epidemic, save the children. Like we get all of that. So the idea, and people have said, and I think it's true, that we are actually having a moral panic around fatness right now, these days, in North America, not just North America.
So you're talking about fat panic. Another term that's often used is fat phobia, and then there's fat depression. Can you speak a little bit to what these different terms mean and the differences between them?
Sure. Well, with fat panic, we're playing a bit with the idea that people are in a panic about fat, but we're also actually wanting to really address that, because what's going on, many of us would name fat oppression. And when using that term, what I'm talking about and what other people are talking about is the idea that there is a systemic form of injustice at play in our society that focuses on body weight, on fatness. So here, for me, it's really important to be looking at kind of underlying structures of oppression generally, and understanding that fat oppression is a form of oppression in the same way that other forms of oppression that we might be more familiar with or more used to naming are oppressions. And so, yeah, wanting to look at the underlying structures of oppression that are about othering and limiting access to resources, all of those sorts of things, and also then the intersections between different forms of oppression. So fat oppression, like all forms of oppression, interacts with all of them in each of our lives. We are all being shaped at all times by fat oppression and racism and ableism.
As you're well aware, the Canadian Fertility and Andrology Society recently proposed a ban on fertility treatments for what they call obese women. What was your first reaction when you heard about this proposal?
I wasn't surprised, because my own experience was of being denied fertility treatment at Genesis Clinic, because they said that they don't believe that fat women should have access to fertility treatment, and that was maybe 7 years ago now. So the idea that there's within that kind of that field an interest in limiting access to reproductive technologies for fat women, that really resonated with my own experience. The other thing that I think of when I hear that is that this is actually related to kind of eugenics, the idea that some people can and should and have the right to reproduce, and some people shouldn't. Yeah, those are some of my reactions when I hear that.
Of course, the Fertility and Andrology Society, when they put forward this proposal, claimed that they're looking out for the health of women and children, and that there are medical reasons for imposing this ban. What do you make of that argument?
I think that when you actually get into looking at, as I've done, like into the research around fat and health, the story that we're told in a way that is pervasive and nonstop, and actually it sort of batters us all the time. The story that fat equals unhealthy actually does not hold up. There's so much to say in there that I don't even actually know where to start with that. But I mean, one of the things that I think is kind of ironic is that a lot of fertility treatment is actually to help people who are having trouble conceiving or who they know are going to have difficult pregnancies because of various kinds of health concerns. And yet it's understood that fertility treatment, that that's actually an important part of why that service is offered. So the notion that maybe, and I'm not even convinced, but maybe some fat women are going to have more difficulty in some way through the pregnancy experience, that might be a reason to pay more attention to what, you know, the woman is going through, like with her pregnancy, but it doesn't seem like a good reason to deny fertility treatment.
I know that medical doctors often use BMI, body mass index, to measure obesity, and I was wondering if you could speak specifically to this measurement and what its, advantages, but also its shortcomings are.
Okay, well, so the body mass index is about the relationship between height and weight. So it's actually a very simplistic calculation. And one of the interesting things about the BMI is that a lot of people who have a lot of muscle mass actually rate as too fat according to the BMI, right? So that, I mean, that's one thing that you can look at and go, oh, wait, this is not a very sensitive measure. The other thing is that the BMI doesn't actually, it does not serve as a good indicator of health, all right? We know, for example, that most studies that look at longevity and kind of general health over a lifespan actually find that the people in the so-called overweight category live longer than people in the so-called normal weight. It's what's called a U-shaped curve. And that certainly by the higher weights, you do start seeing increased risk of, you know, somewhat earlier death, things like that. But it's actually the same kind of risk that we see at lower weights as well, including the bottom end of the presumably normal category, right? But that sort of information isn't something that people tend to be told. And most people don't go and read the research themselves, so then they take what kind of is reported in the media as being accurate. Another thing to know about the BMI that's kind of interesting and most people don't realize is that a few years ago, I guess in the 90s now, the powers that be decided to lower the cutoff points for the kind of the line that they draw on the continuum of weight where a person becomes, like goes from underweight to so-called normal to overweight to like obese, right? They moved over those cutoff points, so literally overnight, millions and millions of people became fat who hadn't been fat the day before, right? So that's another kind of signal that the BMI is something here that's, it is a social construct. It's one of the ways that we, as a society, create the notion of obesity. And I actually, by the way, want to kind of throw out the idea that I think the term obesity and obese is a really problematic, those are really problematic terms, because I take issue with the idea that fatness is inherently a medical problem. Again, I don't think that the research into health and fat actually shows that. And the term obese is a disease concept. And so for me, I much prefer the term fat. And I know that, you know, all the people I've ever known who are political around fatness choose to use the word fat over terms like obese and certainly over terms like overweight, which also imply that there is some weight that we are supposed to be at.
How is the proposal to ban fertility treatment to fat women? What was the response from fat activists and anti-repression groups?
Well, fat activists are pretty clear. It's like everybody I know that I've talked to about this, it's really clear that this is just sort of one more piece of the moral panic around fatness that doesn't actually serve fat women, doesn't serve society, that promotes kind of the ongoing marginalization of fat people. So many fat people don't like going to doctors because when they go you know, what we end up hearing is like, oh, you stubbed your toe, that's because you're too fat. Or your shoulder hurts, that's because you're too fat. And so there's already so much kind of shaming and overemphasis on weight when dealing with medical professionals. And I think that this just becomes one more piece of that, like this kind of larger wave that actually prevents fat people from accessing healthcare services of all kind. Anti-oppression activists, you mentioned as well. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because most, in my experience, most people who do anti-oppression work who are not themselves fat and haven't kind of encountered fat activism aren't actually aware of fat oppression. So it's an unfortunate truth that I think a lot of people who identify as being interested in anti-oppression haven't yet kind of expanded their awareness of the full range of different systems of oppression in society. And I don't know that we can ever think we're complete in that, in identifying all the like particular groups who are marginalized. But I really know that a lot of people who are very active in anti-oppression work look perplexed when I say fat oppression. They don't really have that as part of their analysis. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that in the larger kind of anti-oppression world that this is registered.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying that fat folks aren't just marginalized in society at large, but also in progressive circles, including groups and communities that are, you know, explicitly committed to anti-oppression.
Absolutely. Yeah. We actually made a postcard. We have a little cat cartoon, and it's like says Fat Kitty says, you know, don't blame the fat cats, blame capitalism, because so often activists actually will, like, if they want to show, you know, the banking system is evil, they'll show a fat banker crushing poor people, or they want to show like Western overconsumption, it will be a fat person eating the world, things like that. And that kind of ignores the reality that in countries like Canada and the US, the people who are most likely to be fat are poor people, and particularly poor people of color. So it's not really serving the interest when anti-oppression folks kind of use fat hatred to make their points. People who are interested in the work that Fat Panic does are welcome to come to our monthly meeting, which is the last Tuesday of every month. And you can look us up on Facebook for more information about us. Or email us at fatpanic@gmail.com.
And that was fat activist Calamity Hildebrandt, and she was in conversation with Red Eye Collective member Maria Pear's daughter. And if you'd like that information of how to get in touch with people from Fat Panic, their website is fatpanic.wordpress.com, and their email address is fatpanic@gmail.com.